Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's time to talk to Jeff Chedia from NFL Network and NFL.com. Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Good. How you guys doing?
Doing good, man. Glad to have you on the show to talk some football with us. Let's just get right to it. Several New England Patriots have opted out, including Dante Hightower, Patrick Chung, Marcus Cannon, a starting tackle, who is also a cancer survivor. I believe Dante Hightower has a new baby that he just added to his family, and so they have their reasons. But the question is there anything we read into the fact that right now, early on, we've seen these players opt out, and so many of them are from the New England Patriots?
I don't think that specifically is a Patriots issue. I think that, I did a radio interview earlier in the week, and somebody asked me, I think it was right after Duvernay Tardif had opted out. I think it was on Monday. And he asked me, what do you expect? And I said, look, man, I think we just don't know what everybody's health history is. We don't know what their situation is. We don't know what their fear level is. And this is serious. I know there's always a debate about, you know, how critical this is and how it's affecting people's lives, and the death toll isn't as big as people make it out to be. But end of the day, it's like everybody's got to decide how they want to deal with it. And so what I see more of, and maybe I haven't looked at everybody, I saw more bigger players opting out, which I thought might be the case, you know, where obesity levels and high BMI are factors in this virus and how you get it or how vulnerable you are to it. So I'm not surprised. And in fact, we have, until August 4th for everybody else to opt out if they're going to do it. So I think you're going to see a lot more players, a lot more teams have happened, what the Patriots have happened, where you're going to have multiple players do it.
I think part of what Steven said, I can't remember who tweeted this out yesterday, but they quoted like a rival GM that said, I feel like the Patriots are up to something. like I don't know what it is, but yeah, like
Bill Belichick signed a bunch of guys.
Bill Belichick's always thinking one step ahead of everybody. So what's he up to now? Six guys are already opting out on his team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
tanking for Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, I don't know if I see it that seriously. Again, when you have a Pro Bowl linebacker opt out and legitimate reasons. I mean, his mom has type 2 diabetes. The fiance and he have a baby coming in. It's Patrick Chung's been around for a while. I mean, the one guy that I thought was kind of weird was Brandon Bolden, because he's in a contract year, the running back, but, you know, he's not their biggest name running back. Marcus Cannon is a cancer survivor. Everybody who did it had a legitimate reason to do it. And so I don't think it's, again, a Patriot-centric thing. I think it's just more the world we're living in right now. This is going to be an issue throughout the entire season. And all you have to do is look at what happened in baseball. They played three games and the whole world fell apart. You know, all of a sudden you got 17 players or 15 players on one team.
It's up to 18 now. 18 members of the team,
right?
Anyway.
The
team.
Yeah. Okay. There's three front office or people that are staff members, but there's 15 players, I believe.
Yeah. Okay. So I think just the opting out part is just the beginning of it, because we're going to get into the season and you're going to see, maybe not to those levels, maybe to those levels, but you're going to see teams have multiple outbreaks, teams having to sit guys for multiple reasons because, and I've said this before too, NBA, NHL, soccer, you're playing in a bubble.
Yep.
And you can control what guys do. You have a lot more restrictions, and you're basically hardwiring guys to live a certain way. When you're playing a game on Sunday afternoon, Sunday night, and you go home for a full week, you're with your family, you're with your girlfriends, you're with your side piece, you're with your kids, you're with all these different people who have are living their own lives. They're doing their own things. And when kids start going back to school, whenever that is, then you've got to come back to that as well. So there's just so many variables that play into it. And yeah, look, it's great to say the right thing. Hey, we got to be responsible away from here, but you can't be responsible for everybody. And that's the whole point of this whole thing, is that, you know, if everybody was doing the right thing, we wouldn't be where we are right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what I keep pointing out is you, if you're not in a bubble, even if you're doing the right things, you're still living in a community where it's widespread. Yeah. And so you still have to go to the grocery store or get some food somehow and do certain things. So, you know, that's going to be reality too. Yeah,
your kids are going to school. Other people are going to gyms and restaurants and eating out. Like, not is everybody in everybody's house in the NFL going to be just locked down, sitting at home for 6 months? It's not going
to
happen.
Some of those guys might be able to cut out the side piece.
We'll see. We'll see.
You sound skeptical.
I just feel like it's the same thing with college sports. I just laugh when people say we're going to come in here and we're going to, you know, start it up and do the right thing. And we're going to do all this testing and guys are going to be really disciplined. How many 20-some-year-old people you know are just going to sit at home and do nothing?
Well, the tough part is I wouldn't know. I sit here. I'd like to think I would have been really responsible as a college kid, but I think that's kind of a little bit of fantasy. But the tough part is what the Marlins does show us a little bit is all it takes is one guy.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the scary part is you could have 52 of your 53 guys doing the right thing, but if one of them doesn't or gets it or whatever and you don't catch it right away, that's the big fear you have is that it turns into this. You can handle 2, 3, 4 guys getting it, but when 18 guys get it, that's when you have a crisis on your hands, and that's the scary part is how quickly this thing spreads more than anything else, right?
Yeah, you get to a bye week, and guys have, what, a whole week to do nothing, or if they play a Thursday night game and they got a bye week and they got 10 days to do nothing, do I think that they're going to – every player in that situation is going to be locked down doing the right things? I just don't believe that. And that's not to knock the NFL player. I think that's just human nature. You give
humans aren't doing the right things.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what you yeah. You know, that not just athletes.
Yeah. And so you don't even know how many people within that circle of NFL players are of the mindset that it's not a big deal. I'm not going to be a mask wearing guy. I'm not going to be, you know, be scared by this. I'm not going to give up my rights. You know, you don't know who within that group is feeling that way. And so, again, is the NFL doing the best it can? Yes. Are the protocols in place? Good. Yes. But we don't know what's really going to happen until we're out there playing the sport. I mean, right now we're sitting around doing all this testing and, you know, guys are doing video conferencing and, you know, virtual learning. It's all interesting, but, you know, they're not going to put on pads for 2 weeks. Or not, I think after that, I think they're just starting to do walkthroughs in 2 weeks. So I think the pad parts comes after that, the hitting.
Jeff, when's the last time you've been to Atlanta?
Oh, boy.
Atlanta. God, mm-hmm. It must have been the Patriots-Rams Super Bowl?
You ever have the Lou Will Lemon Pepper Barbecue Wings at Magic City?
Oh, okay. This is where you're going with that?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to find that? Out.
Kevin Harlan says he wants them on the staff, by the way, like during the broadcast.
You travel a lot, and so I don't know if you've had the Lou Will Lemon Pepper Barbecue Wings at Magic City, so I'm trying to put everything into perspective here.
I tend to not eat the food at strip joints, but... Well, But I'm assuming you must have tried them and they must be pretty good.
No, I want to know because that's what Lou Williams risked it all for. He has
it was a family matter, wasn't it? I thought it was a family matter.
Well, we had to get some food.
Well, he went to his grandfather's wake, but then he stopped by Magic City.
Okay.
And he got hungry. Photographed.
But the wings are named after him.
Photographed by rapper Jack Harlow, but you know, and said, "Hey, with my guy Lou Williams," and then, you know, he posted on Instagram.
Psych.
And then erased it and said, "Oh, that was from last year. I just missed my guy Lou. That's all."
Yeah.
But Lou had the face mask that he was given in the bubble, and so you knew it wasn't from last year. Yeah. And then Lou Williams said, "Look here, I just was getting the lemon pepper. I mean, they're named after him.
Yeah. Look at it. I mean, his name's on the damn wing.
I don't know.
Gotcha. You just
I don't
know
if, yeah. if you could say like, oh, those are great wings. So if you don't know, then I just was." Trying to find out if you had any.
But see, that plays right into my point. You're talking about a guy who was dumb enough to leave, go to a strip joint, get the wings, and then take the picture and put it on Instagram.
That's a bit judgy, don't
so
you think?
Probably like five or six.
Jack Harlow put it on Instagram. It wasn't Lou, you know.
Well, hey.
I just feel like I know athletes. I've been around athletes a long time in my life, probably 30-some years pro athletes. And I tend to believe that. Again, no knock on them, but most guys are prone to, you know, probably making a mistake here or there or doing something that's a little irresponsible without a pandemic in the equation.
Look, to be an NFL football player, you have to be, to me, you have to be wired a different way in the first place because human instinct when you see a 200-pound person running full speed at you is to get out of the way. You don't get out of the way in football. You run right into that person as fast as you can, to the detriment of your own health and well-being. So you already don't really process risk the same way that maybe the average person does. You know, I mean, that's fair to reason.
Look, I think everybody here remembers back in the day when the Chiefs would go training camp up in, River Falls, Wisconsin. So you got guys going away.
Wonderful.
Being up in middle of nowhere for, 5-6 weeks, how many times were those guys just waiting to get out of practice, hitting the road, getting into town, getting to the bars, going wherever they were going to go?
Bows and Mine.
Yeah.
We met the name of the place.
What was that? Bows and
Mine? Bows and Mine. That was the bar in town.
Okay.
Where Andre Rison.
I was a Copper Kettle guy.
Well, there's a few different spots. Yeah.
And the West Wind and Steve's Pizza were my favorites.
Those were more restaurant-y type places, though. Bows and Mine was a little bit of a bar. Isn't that where Brock Magic Middlebrook City. Gotten himself? Andre Rison got in some trouble with the authorities up there and told them his name was Brock Middlebrook.
Brock Middlebrook? Okay. Might be a lot of Brock Middlebrooks out there this season. I will say that that's, a 5 or 6 week period of guys just being hemmed up. And again, you hope, knock on wood, that it doesn't become that, but I think the NFL is very aware that they're going to have a lot of positive tests at some point over the course of the year, and they're trying to be prepared for that. But the big question I've always had in this that hasn't been answered yet, the baseball just answered it on their end of it, was what's the number, what's it going to take to shut a team down? What's it going to take to say we're not playing a game with this team, we're altering the schedule, because that number's got to be out there. And if it's 18 people, if it's 17 players, that's a third of an NFL team. You get past 10 and you're talking about just craziness.
Well, hopefully we learned a little bit with the Marlins situation. They had 4 guys positive at first and they went out and played anyway. Yeah. Like, they should have done something to stop things right at that point to see if they could have, to stop it. The one good thing you have in football, though, compared to baseball, is you don't play every day and you don't travel as much. Right, like that is at least a positive for football, isn't it? That, I mean, the baseball, some of the articles you read now, the managers in baseball said they're going on the road, and in the hotels they're staying in, there are big weddings taking place, and like big parties of people that are not observing any of the social distancing rules and all that stuff, and they're worried about the travel part. At least in football, you only got 8 road trips. You get in and you get out. And, because that's part of the thing that in baseball they're saying they're really kind of worried about right now.
Yeah, but again, you have different circumstances with different teams, different sports. I mean, you're going to have a lot more gathering of players and people within football, in locker rooms, post-game celebrations, touchdown celebration, huddles.
In the game.
All it takes is one person. Granted, now, I forget how the testing works before the game started. I think they're talking about Friday as the last time to test before a Sunday game. I thought that was what it was. Maybe I'm wrong. But say a guy tests on Friday, wakes up on Saturday, he's not feeling the greatest. You think that guy's not going to go play a game? You think he's going to be like, hey, you know what, I'm checking out? Or even worse, hey, he tests positive on a Saturday, or he has it on Saturday, goes plays on Sunday, and he's around a whole bunch of guys during the game. That's all it takes. That's all I'm saying. It's almost a cop-out to say, well, baseball's got all these things going on here where they travel and do more stuff. And I understand the point you're making, I'm saying. But for football to say, well, we don't operate that way, so it's better for us, it's not realistic.
That would be irresponsible. Yeah. I'm trying to be optimistic. Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to come up with reasons why this is going to work.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm curious how you transport players to the away games, how you put it. There's going to be like 16 buses. to get to a certain place. You've had Bruce Arians say, I got to figure out if I'm putting my emergency quarterback in the same room as my other quarterbacks, because I can't afford to have all 3 guys be together and have somebody get this. It's there's so many variables in this, and I am optimistic that it will start. I'm not trying to be a pessimistic about that part of it, but I just think there's so many variables that go into football, and football by nature, the game itself and the culture surrounding it, is so much about gathering, so much about partying, so much about doing things, and so much about having free time. Free time, to me, is the devil in all this. I feel like, NBA's got the best thing going, because play your game, go back to your room, get on your Xbox. You know, unless you want to get your Magic City wings.
know. The Lou Will lemon pepper wings. We have Jeff Chedia from NFL Network and NFL.com joining us. Jeff, there's two separate conversations here. We talk about why players are opting out. Now I'd like to talk about what it does to the teams. Yeah. And so let's start with, and then we'll work our way back to Kansas City and LDT. But how difficult is it to replace a player like Dante Hightower for the Patriots?
Oh, it's hard. It's hard. I mean, you're talking about, if this was Kansas City, but you're talking about replacing Tyrann Mathieu or Chris Jones or Frank Clark. I mean, he's their best defensive player. And they lost a bunch of guys in the offseason. You know, so they lost Jamie Collins. They lost Kyle Van Noy. They lost a bunch of linebackers. Lost another linebacker, too. I forget his name, but he was playing running back at the end of the season for them. So he is.
And then add Chung to the list out of the defense, too.
Yeah, add Chung, yeah. And so they got a lot of DBs. So the secondary isn't as much of a hit because they drafted the kid, Kyle Duggar. I mean, Chung has value because he's been there so long and he's versatile and he knows the system and you can – they change up what they do every week. So he is somebody who's been around and can make those kind of moves. But, yeah, he's a loss, too. Yeah, it has a huge impact on them. And, you know, looking at just the moves they've been making, and they've got some young players they're bringing into the fold now. They drafted a couple kids out of Michigan, Josh Uche, and his defensive end, I can't remember his name now. They drafted the kid Kyle Duggar, the safety. So they're going to be playing like three or four young guys. So to not have your defensive captain there in place, it puts a huge, huge dent in your plans.
Well, playing young guys isn't exactly what you want to be doing this year either, right? Considering exactly how much off-season time you missed with all them.
Yeah, and that again, that takes away from what they do well, which is constantly changing things up. You have to almost dumb things down now because unless you're playing out there with MIT grads, it's like these guys can't just like process all this stuff if they haven't been in the NFL that long. They've been around. Even I think John Elway said this with Denver. He said he was really excited about their offense, but you got to temper expectations now because you don't have all the time in the offseason to practice. You don't have preseason games either now.
Right.
Which as much as the teams didn't want that, there's a lot of value in that for teams that have young players who are trying to get on the field.
Speaking of John Elway, he also just told everyone what we already knew, that Patrick Mahomes is the best player in football. So I liked hearing him say that. And he said that the Chiefs underpaid Patrick Mahomes, Jeff.
Yeah, they did.
I just like hearing it from Elway. I know he did. Yeah. I know they did.
Yeah,
I just want Elway, and there's, it doesn't change anything. I just want Elway to stand up and acknowledge all of this.
That's right.
That's a big win.
Is it
for any Chiefs fan that grew up in Kansas City and was tormented by John Elway?
So the Super Bowl doesn't mean as much as John Elway saying we got the best player on the planet and.
The Super Bowl's the cake.
Okay.
This is just the little icing.
I got you.
There's a little frosting on there. You know, that's all.
What was the context of that? So, why was he talking about Mahomes? What was the
yesterday he spoke with the local media and the news had broken that Mahomes had become part of the Royals ownership group right before Elway spoke, and so they asked him about that. And he said, well, first of all, I hope they hire him in the Royals front office. He can spend half his time over there with the Royals. That would be fine with me, too. Or he can spend all of his time over there.
Yeah.
He doesn't want him to play football. And so then he said, obviously, with his contract, he's the best player in the league. I think it's a well-deserved contract. They think the way he's played the first 3 years or 2 years as a starter, he's a guy that represents the league very well, a tremendous player. I'm happy with the fact they got him. He got the contract. I wish he would have got more. I think they underpaid him.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm sure that whenever he's got to negotiate with Drew Lock, if Drew Lock comes up, I'm sure he's very happy that they underpaid Patrick Mahomes because that means they're going to underpay Drew Lock.
Okay, so we talked about the Patriots and how they're affected by this. The Chiefs lose LDT. They go out and sign Osemele, who a couple of years ago was one of the best guards in football. We all know what happened with his injury dispute with the New York Jets, and so they bring him in. They also signed Mike Remmers in the offseason. They drafted Lucas Niang. They've got Wiley. They've got Martinez Rankin. They've got some bodies there. How do you think this affects the Chiefs, and what did you think of their response by signing Osemele to a free agent contract?
You know, it affects them. I mean, if you're going position by position, you start getting into the interior offensive linemen. Guards are not as valuable as tackles. But, you know, you also don't want people running into Patrick Mahomes' face every down either. So, but he was a pretty good guard and a smart player who'd been here for a while. You know, he'd been banged up, so you have players who've played in that spot already. So they've learned, they've been able to succeed without him. But, yeah, it's a loss without question. I mean, Osemele, we'll see where he's at coming in. As you mentioned, back when he was with the Raiders, he was a Pro Bowl player. He was one of the most coveted free agents on the market back when before he signed with them. So he has talent there, but he's also an older player, and the injury situation in New York, it's, you know, he's bounced around. You never know where a guy's at after he's gotten away from being on top of his game like that. But, you know, I think that they do a really good job of managing their offensive line. You look at what happened last year. They had multiple injuries, and Andy Heck was able to mix and match and make things work. And usually when you have a great quarterback, that makes your offensive line play a little easier to deal with because he can get the ball out, he can move around, they can do different things. I'm sure the screen game will be a bigger factor in what they do now, so they'll be able to keep defenses off balance. So it's a blow, but it's a manageable blow, if that makes sense.
Some news came out this morning as well regarding the Chiefs. They apparently have agreed to a contract with Tedrick Thompson, a safety that was let go by the Seahawks after having shoulder issues last year, being brought in to have some depth there at the safety position. Your thoughts on that move?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know much about him.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think they need to bring depth, I think, throughout the back end of their defense. You go past, you look at linebacker, you look at corner, and safety. There's not a lot of players, so you start having injuries in the back seven of your defense, there's going to be some issues there. So I think, yeah, it makes all the sense in the world. A guy could probably play special teams for you and compete for a job. And Seattle definitely is making a lot of moves in their secondary. I mean, giving up two first-round picks for a safety, that's like I never thought I'd see that happen in the NFL moving forward. I mean, Jamal Adams is – whew, that's a big burden to carry going into there. But – you know, but yeah, I think it's just a move for depth. That's the only way I see it.
Yeah,
we will break, and after that, let's talk more about the Jets and Seahawks trade, Jamal Adams going to Seattle, and also the contract extension that the Chargers have just given Joey Bosa, 5 years, $135 million. We'll talk to Jeff Jadia about those two transactions after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and A. Bucati with Jake Gutierrez on this Wednesday, July 29th. Our guest is Jeff Jadia from NFL Network and NFL.com. Jamal Adams going from the Jets to the Seahawks. Several things I want to ask you about here. First, before we get into what they gave up, how much does this change your view of the Seahawks? Does this elevate them above any other contenders based on what your power rankings were? Does this make them the favorite in the NFC? Do you think this will get them back to the Super Bowl? How much of an impact will Jamal Adams have on the Seahawks?
It's nominal right now. I mean, he's a great player. But if you followed them last year, their issues were up front with their pass rush. And that's what when they've been really good, that's what's always been really effective. I know Pete Carroll loves his secondary and loves to make that the foundation. But, you know, if you can't get after the quarterback up front, it doesn't matter who's playing on the back end. So losing Clowney, they haven't really found a way to found somebody else to step up on that D-line to really be effective and consistent as a pass rusher. So I think that's where it has to start for them. But if you look at Pete Carroll's history, when he first got to Seattle, the first pick he made was Earl Thomas. And so his belief is that if you're able to get a stud safety, that is the linchpin for everything he wants to do as far as pass defense. And so Jamal Adams brings everything that an Earl Thomas does. He doesn't intercept the ball as well. He's not as fast as Earl Thomas was in his heyday, but you know, he can do everything you want as a safety. The thing that people knock him on is that he doesn't pick the ball off that much. I think he's got 2 career interceptions. But, you know, you can play him in the box the way they, you know, the way they did Cam Chancellor back in the day. You can play him in the deep end, in the deep safety role, center field type. So a lot of flexibility, a lot of versatility. And, yeah, I mean, look, that whole division is tough. It's probably the toughest division in football right now because Arizona's going to be a lot better with DeAndre Hopkins coming over there. The Rams were a Super Bowl team a couple years ago. They, you know, were challenging for a playoff spot down the stretch last year. And then you've got the 2 teams that made the playoffs, when Seattle and the Niners should play in the Super Bowl. So I think it's going to be tough. I just don't – it's hard in this world to imagine a safety, a guy who is not directly involved in every play being worth that kind of compensation. Now, if you're talking about a quarterback, I get it. Even Khalil Mack, who was going to chase a quarterback, I get it. But somebody who's that far away from the football, it's a little bit harder to stomach. But if you're the Jets, you're pretty happy right now.
I mean, seeing what Tyrann Mathieu did for this Chiefs team and the versatility that certain safeties have, is it not a sign, though, that the importance of that position has evolved as offenses have evolved, and the danger that running backs and tight ends and guys like that possess in, you know, you have to have linebackers and safeties that can do all those different things?
Yeah, but, you know, it was about maybe 6-7 years ago when the hitting started getting taken away from football and the defenses became more hamstrung, that you saw more teams trying to find those kind of players. The problem with safety is that nowadays you have to find guys who can run. And so if you look at college football, you either are looking at – if you're looking at guys who are coming out of college to play in the NFL, looking at 2 types of guys, either guys who were bigger corners or guys who were just safeties, traditional safeties who were like just smaller players. And when you get into those kind of players, you're talking about guys who are probably like 5'11", 6 feet tall, like 190, then it becomes a run defense issue, you know, because generally there's 2 types of safeties out there now, either guys who are good in run defense and can't cover, or guys who can cover and are just smaller dudes.
That's why Victor Simmons is like the most valuable type of player, right?
Yeah.
I mean.
You mean Jamal Adams.
Isaiah Simmons.
Isaiah Simmons. Okay.
Sorry, Victor.
I'm like, who's Victor Simmons?
Victor Simmons was his older.
I was so confused. Sorry. Like, what the hell is he talking about?
This is how bad my brain is. Victor Simmons is Isaiah's older brother who played at KU. Wasn't quite as good.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. There we go.
Isaiah Simmons. Sorry. Yeah. That's why he's. Yeah. He's such a valuable piece because he's big and can run like that, right?
Yeah. And Jamal Adams does. I mean, you don't normally talk about this with safeties, but he did have 6.5 sacks last year, and he has 12 in his career, so he does.
Oh, he does a lot of stuff.
Back a little bit.
Yeah, he's a rarity, which is why he wanted so much money, because he knew he was a rarity. You look at the safety market, and you get past guys like, or the safety position, you get past guys like him, Tyrann Mathieu. I'm trying to think of who else would be Earl Thomas. There's only a handful of guys who are really big name dudes, and everybody else is kind of in that category of. You know, he was a 4th, 5th round pick, and he fit the system well. Like, a perfect example is the kid who played at Green Bay, went to Chicago. Ha-ha, Clinton Dix. You know, he's the kind of guy who is 1st-round pick. He played well, but they didn't want to pay him.
Right.
Because they felt like, we can find somebody else to do what you do. And so that's what you get into with safeties.
So I was on NFL Live KC on Monday night. I had somebody on from Seattle to talk about the trade from their perspective, and I asked him, does this make him a Super Bowl contender in your mind? And he said it still doesn't address their biggest issue on defense, which is a lack of pass rush that they used to have.
I think I just said that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's what
he's
I just said.
He's just echoing your comments.
Okay.
He's confirming that you're not the only one.
That's how much
you
believe in
what
you
said. Are you listening to me?
Are
you thinking about Victor Simmons and the way he terrorized opponents at KU?
Victor Simmons did terrorize opponents at KU.
Yeah. No, but I'm kidding here. But, yeah, it's – look, if you can't get after the quarterback, not just in this league but in that conference, they have a hard time winning games. Like, when they started to get really good again, Seattle – which was probably around week 7, week 8. Like, they were kind of struggling, and then they just really hit overdrive for a second there. Clowney was healthy. The guy they got from Detroit, who they signed there. God, I can't remember anybody's name nowadays. The big defensive
Victor
end.
Simmons, I think is his name. Victor
Simmons. He played at BYU, and I should know. That's how many Lions games I watched, but I forgot this guy was first-round pick, supposed to be a stud for him. But they had like two or three guys who were supposed to be big-time pass rushers, and Clowney was hurt, and it just didn't work. You know, the thing about Tyrann Mathieu here, and the point you were making is a valid point, but here they do so much more stuff that was putting pressure on the cornerbacks. So they asked the cornerbacks to play more man stuff, and now you know they kind of mix it up more, but he is able to make up for mistakes. In Seattle, they play a lot more zone coverage, and so when you got a safety there, you're not asking your corners to really do so much. But he's, if you get a player like that, he has value. If it's value that's worth two first-round picks, I think you're crazy.
We have Jeff Chedilla from NFL Network and NFL.com on the show right now. What did you think of the giant extension from the Chargers and Joey Bosa?
Well, you knew it was coming after Myles Garrett got paid. And it's, look, he's worth it. There aren't too many players I would say that about, but I would say, what was it, $100 million he got guaranteed, $102 million, and $78 million to sign?
$102 guaranteed.
Yeah.
I mean, $78 guaranteed at signing.
Man, he got more guaranteed to sign his deal than Patrick Mahomes got.
Well, Mahomes didn't really get even much of a signing bonus, really.
Yeah, I mean, within the first 3 years of the deal, he got $63 million in the first 3 years of the deal. He's getting
$78
million.
Maybe the signing bonus was the Royals.
Yeah.
That's what he gets.
Yeah, a stake in the Royals.
Yeah. But right. But it's an impressive contract, and we sit here and talk about just, you know, sometimes it's funny money with NFL contracts. $135 million contract and $102 million is guaranteed. That's not funny money. That's like laughing all the way to the bank.
What is Mitchell Schwartz worth then, because he can't ever beat him?
I don't know. it's a good question for Mitchell Schwartz there. But Bosa is, look, from day one since he got there, I think he's had double-digit sacks every year since he's been there. And he was, what, he held out for, what, the first three or four games of his rookie season and then came on and just tore it up.
Mm-hmm.
Him and his brother, man, they're freaks. They're legit guys. I mean, they you have to double-team them. You have to account for them. They create so much, so many issues. When he's not in that lineup, it affects them. Remember a couple of years ago he was hurt at the start of the year, and I think that was the year that Mahomes started, and they played the Chiefs the first game, and they just lit him up. And the second game, they beat him. So it was just like you see the difference there in what he can do and how he can affect teams. So, yeah, he is everything you want a defensive end to be right now. And that those kind of guys are getting paid that kind of money. It's why Chris Jones was really trying to make a big deal about what he needed to, because even though he's not a defensive end, he still can have that kind of impact on the game.
What do you think is going to happen with this salary cap next year, though? I mean, if teams, it's been surprising me how much teams have been willing to commit some money when there's not really a resolution to that yet.
I think you're going to see a lot of guys get cut. That's what I think. And I think you're going to see the way this is going. If the worst case scenario, if the NFL has like the kind of financial losses that they project, you know, with fans and all that stuff not being in the games or whatever, I think there's two kinds of GMs out there. They're the GMs, like you look what happened in Denver with John Elway and his safety, Justin Simmons. It's like, couldn't get a deal done. With the Ravens, Matthew Judon couldn't get a deal done. So those GMs are looking at like, I don't want to be stuck in a situation where I'm scrambling with my salary cap. The Chiefs, on the other hand, said, look, we're going to pay Chris Jones. We're going to make our run for the next couple of years. And if we got to, you know, lose some players next season with the salary cap, we'll do it. Everybody's got a plan in place, end of the day. So if you're a team that's built to win now, you've probably already identified certain players you know you're going to restructure, certain players you know you're going to have to let go of, and certain players that you're going to have to find cheaper replacements for. It's just a matter of how it goes forward. But, yeah, I think the number $175 million sounds like no lower than that for the salary cap, sounds about what people were talking about, like a $30, $40 million drop. And if you're the Chiefs, for example, I think they've got commitments of $240 million for next year already contractually. So they got to, if it's $175 million, they got to find a way to get rid of $65 million. So, you know, but there's other teams in that same boat who are trying to win championships right now.
Which Bosa brother is better?
I think Nick's better. Be honest with you.
Top 100 on NFL.com or NFL Network, Nick was 17 and Joey was 34 in the top 100 players, which apparently has pissed every player off. But, which is, I'm here for
is it. Over?
No, top 10 to come. Okay. They've got the first 90, but there was I was watching some people debate this last night because Joey Bosa was picked 34, and then Nick Bosa was 17, and Joey gets a big contract today, which I'm sure Nick will get at some point. But, I mean, that they're both. I mean,
look,
49ers lost, but Nick Bosa had a pretty damn good Super Bowl.
Yeah, you know? and people, I heard their defensive coordinator talking about him last year and just saying he's never seen a first-year player get the kind of treatment that he got in his first season with the 49ers. And that, you know, the double teams, the chips, just the constant attention. And he was playing on a defensive line that had DeForest Buckner, had Dee Ford, had all types of players who were first-round picks who'd been around for a long time. So for him to come in and attract that kind of attention, it just speaks to how good he really is.
Did you like how mad Keenan Allen was about being ranked so low?
What was that? Is that what the Mike Evans thing was, or was it?
He didn't like being so low, and he dropped a lot. He several spots from
a
last
lot.
Year. He was still in it, but then so he went to Twitter and he tried to tag Chris Godwin, but he tagged somebody named Chris Goodwin. He tagged Chris Goodwin. He tagged Mike Evans, and he tagged Tyreek Hill, and said no way these guys are better than me, and so then. Mike Evans retweeted him and said you tagged the wrong Chris Godwin, LOL, and then he told him that there's no way you're on my level. So it was going back and forth. So I'll put it to you, just with those four, rank Tyreek Hill, Keenan Allen, and then the two Tampa receivers. Settle this damn Twitter debate.
And where'd they rank in the 100? So I know.
So I know Keenan Allen was behind everyone. I need to look at the total.
I'm actually surprised Keenan Allen was in
right?
there. Yeah.
Oh, are you?
I was surprised. I'm surprised he was even on the list. To be honest with the way last year went for him.
So he
for
was,
that team.
He was crazy then.
No, but I'm just saying. But if I were to rank him, I would say Mike Evans, Tyreek Hill, Keenan Allen, Chris Godwin. You know, but it's. But I also
Tyreek's
remember
22. Let you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where's Evans at?
I'm looking for him.
30.
Okay.
He's 30. Let's see if I can find Godwin's 38.
All well ahead of
Keenan Allen 77.
Yeah, a little bit further down.
Yeah, I mean that's like, and you're not even talking about within that. That's a good group right there. But you start talking about the guys who were ahead of those dudes, like the Mike Thomases and the Julio Jones. I mean, Julio Jones, for my money, is the best receiver in the NFL.
Jones is 11 on this list.
I don't care who
it is. Michael Thomas.
Thank you.
Jake's in agreement on that.
Yes, I am. We had that discussion earlier.
Did you?
Yeah, probably early in the year, we were talking about, I think it's right after Michael Thomas did come out and said something, and we were talking about best receivers in the game, and that's, I think he allows you to do so many different things, and there's just like he's got a skill set across the board that no one can touch on all of them,
yeah.
Right?
And
you know, because there's things like Michael Thomas, his hands are out of this world. His route running is phenomenal, but you're not gonna out
fast.
Yeah, he's not fast. Yeah. But Julio can outrun everybody, outjump everybody, and his routes are so precise. I mean, that I'm with you.
Yeah, sorry. I don't think it's close. Yeah.
The top 10, they're going to. We don't know how they're ranked, but the top 10. Is Russell Wilson, Michael Thomas, Patrick Mahomes, Christian McCaffrey, George Kittle, Lamar Jackson, DeAndre Hopkins, Derrick Henry, Stephon Gilmore, and Aaron Donald. You didn't mention
George
DeAndre
Kittle,
Hopkins
huh?
in there. So where does Hopkins rank if you're comparing him to Michael Thomas and Julio Jones?
Well, like last year, people said he didn't even drop a ball the entire season. And I remember he was, I think, certainly in the top five of that group. I would put, if I'm picking my top five receivers, I'm taking Julio. I'll take DeAndre. I'll take Michael Thomas. When Odell Beckham is serious and committed.
Yeah, but that's that's not how we're voting on this.
When's that?
Yeah,
when is that?
If I could have Odell Beckham from 2015,
if I can have it games 3 through 6 in 2017, and
take him on Tuesdays and Sundays.
So then, if you know who's in the top 10, then how would you rank the top five then overall?
Overall players?
Out of those, out of that group of 10. Who's number one? You know, well, who,
I'd be curious to see how they rank it, because I know when they do the voting, and it's before the postseason starts. It's like around the time they do the Pro Bowl voting. So I would take Mahomes, Lamar Jackson. Who else is in there?
Aaron Donald, Gilmore, Derrick Henry, George Kittle, McCaffrey, Michael Thomas, Russell Wilson, along with Mahomes.
Well, I can tell you the bottom five. Wilson will be in the bottom five of that group. Henry, Kittle, and McCaffrey. They'll definitely be in the bottom five of that. So, but I suspect you're going to see a lot of people vote for Lamar Jackson as number one based on what they were doing last year at this time and when they voted. And at that point, when they voted, Lamar Jackson was on his way to being unanimous MVP.
Why is George Kittle rated above Travis Kelce?
That's why I was surprised to hear that name in there.
Yeah, that very much surprises me to hear him as a top 10. I mean, I think he's a really good player. Top 10
Kelce
player.
18? Kelce 18? Is that right? For people that
I don't know.
I just clicked off of the link.
But I would suspect Kittle's up high because the Niners didn't have the kind of 18. Weapons as the Chiefs. So if you have Tyreek Hill and you've got Sammy Watkins, they probably feel like that's a benefit to Kelce as opposed to Kittle, who had Debo Samuel and Emmanuel Sanders showed up, seven or eight or whatever it was. So
who's harder to guard?
I think they're similar. I think they play the same style.
Does age have any factor in that? I mean, Kittle's 26.
I think people give Kittle a lot of credit because he's a really good run blocker. That's why I think they see the book on Kelce is that he's more straight receiving tight end, like a Tony Gonzalez type guy, and Kittle will do both.
I'm not saying that Kelce's a great blocker, but I do think he's underrated. He's not just a pass catching tight end like some guys. He will actually get out and block. But looking at his numbers, he was the fourth rate. I mean, like, he had the fourth most receiving yards in the NFL last year of everybody, not just tight ends. Like, he was. Yeah. There were only three wide receivers, Kelce. Yeah. There were only three wide receivers that had more receiving yards than him last year. I mean, that. And on the one hand, yeah, you could say, well, he's got all these weapons that make him more difficult to guard because you can't bracket him all the time. Yeah. But on the other hand, you could also say, shouldn't that take away some of his stats if there's five other guys getting passed that are getting targets and everything on the on the offense than him?
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it's you're wrong to think he's better. I think it's a apples to oranges type conversation. All I'm saying is I know what people think about Kittle.
Yeah.
And I know that his run blocking is superb, and a lot of what they do in the Niners system depends on him being a really good run blocker because they run so much motion and put him in positions to take on people and open up holes. So, I mean, that's the only thing I could see. And I guarantee you when they talk about Kittle, they're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
Whenever they do their top 10 tonight. I work for the NFL Network. I don't even know this stuff. I'm sitting here
act like you know
you guys
what's
are watching
going on
this
here,
stuff?
What's happening? Look. And I'll just again say this about
Kelce.
Get my
TV guide back. What's that?
4 years in a row with 1,000 yards, no tight end in NFL history has ever done that. And that's something that's only matched currently by Mike Evans, Julio Jones, and Michael Thomas, the guys we're talking about as the elite wide receivers in the league. Travis Kelce is the best tight end in Chiefs history.
Really? Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And,
not even close.
And
Travis Kelce's better than Tony Gonzalez?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
In what way?
All of them.
Every way.
Like what,
and the
like
only
what
the only way that he's not better is reliable.
He's a
hands.
Winner. He won a championship.
He drops a few passes that. But he is so much harder to defend than Tony Gonzalez.
So you're saying Travis Kelce would be a first ballot Hall of Famer?
Should
be.
Heck yeah. He's putting up better stats than Gonzalez.
Why not?
How many passes Tony Gonzalez count in his career? And I'm not trying to knock Travis. I think he's going to be a Hall of Fame player. I'm just saying, like, at the end of the day, I think Tony Gonzalez is going to end up having more. He's got more catches than anybody in NFL history at tight end.
The longevity of Tony Gonzalez will be very difficult to match. Yeah. Very difficult to match. Tony Gonzalez had four career 1,000-yard seasons. Travis Kelce has four in a row.
Yeah, but he was also playing in a different era, and he was playing with less talent around him. He was throwing the football to him. He had some years where he was getting the football thrown by Damon Heward, right?
Right. Well, he had some years with Trent Green where he had the best offensive line in football and no real threats at wide receiver and no guys really taking targets away from him, except guys out of the backfield. I mean, those were some unbelievable offenses there that we forget about with Dick Vermeil and
give me Gonzalez's stats.
What's that?
Give me Gonzalez's stats.
Career stats?
Yeah.
1325 catches, 15,127 yards, 111 touchdowns. And the longevity is going to be very difficult to match.
Where's Kelce at?
507 catches, 6,465 yards, and 37 touchdowns.
Okay, and he's 31 right now, Kelce? 30.
He's 30.
Okay, so he's going to need at least 800 more receptions in the next however many years he's going to play. All I'm saying is, numbers-wise, that's what I would go off of. And Gonzalez is it's no taint on Travis Kelce to be the second best receiver in Chiefs history.
No, but if you have one of those, you're going into the Super Bowl tomorrow, and you have to pick one of those two guys at their top form, you're taking Tony Gonzalez at his best against Travis Kelce at his best?
Yeah. Gonzalez caught a ton of – look at the touchdouns. Look at the touchdowns compared. I mean, Kelce's got, 50?
37.
30, 37,
well,
40,
but it's
37?
All about the cumulative stuff. The most that Gonzalez ever had in a season for touchdown catches was 11.
And look, and Gonzalez was a fantastic tight end, but one of the most remarkable things about him is he was so good for so long, the longevity, and I don't think Kelce will reach that. That's amazing. That's why his numbers – look, he was even when he was – slowing down, he was still getting 80 catches and 800, 900 yards a year for Atlanta, and of course a lot of this comes from me being bitter that he is
okay. Now we get down to the truth of
it. Well, I'm not going to hide it.
Okay, all right.
I'm not hiding it. I will declare Travis Kelce greatest tight end in Chiefs history today.
Hey, there's no shame for Tony Gonzalez to be the second best tight end for the Chiefs.
Well, look,
there's no shame in that.
I know we put out a list of the top 100 with our 100th year celebration.
Are you sure
and
list about
of
that?
The top three tight ends. Yeah, I'm sure about it. I the book is at home on my coffee table, so I can guarantee you I know what I'm talking about here. And the three tight ends they picked was Gonzalez, Kellen Winslow, and Rob Gronkowski. Those were the three. So as much as I love Travis Kelce, it's hard for me to see him knocking somebody out of that group. You know, he's
a phenomenal
tight end. What's that?
He's going to knock Gronk out of that group.
I don't know, man. Gronk's pretty good.
Yeah.
And if you're talking about championships, he's got six of them.
Hey.
I feel bad that I actually have to.
He's got running down to Kelce.
I can't believe that all of a sudden Tony Gonzalez was the biggest thing in town for a decade and a half. And he's like,
I'll take Keith Cash over Tony Gonzalez.
Whoa.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
I got to defend the OGs around here. You guys are like.
All I'm telling you is I'm looking for a list of four straight 1,000-yard seasons for tight ends, and it's not a list. It's just a name, and it's Travis Kelce.
That's right.
Count touchdowns. Count touchdowns next time.
Well,
let me know.
And we can also count Super Bowl rings, and
Tony
Gonzalez borrow his.
Oh boy,
maybe Gonzalez can shine that ring for him. Man. Get that clean for him.
Tony Gonzalez goes down to get some rings from Magic City, and everybody wants to hate on him now. Wants to hang out in Atlanta. I guarantee he was happy with
Jeff
the food
Judea.
Down there. All right, man.
You're number one on our top 100.
That's right.
List for the NFL Network personality.
Damn
like
straight.
That.
Yep.
That's right.
Watch that show tonight.
Jeff Judea.
Top 10.
Think.
See what happens.
I'm just gonna watch Twitter. Somehow Keenan Allen would be pissed off about this too. I'm very excited by this. That's Jeff Judea. Thank you so much for listening to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB.